problems with the dreamwalker, Ulyssia. Well, I wouldn't know. I sleep like a baby. Richard usually knew when a person with the gift was touching their Han. He could sense it or see it in their eyes. The air about these women fairly sizzled. There seemed enough power bottled up behind all those eyes to melt a mountain. Apparently, it wasn't enough. A dreamwalker must be a formidable opponent. All right, Ulyssia, let's get to the point. I want Kaelin, and you want something. What is it? Ulyssia fingered the ring through her lip as she looked away from his eyes. This has to be decided before we sleep. I have only just told my sisters of the plan I devised. We couldn't find Nikki to include her. If we go to sleep before this is resolved, and any of us dreams of it, resolved. I want Kaelin. Just tell me what you want. Ulyssia cleared her throat. We want to swear loyalty to you. Richard stared, unable to blink. He wasn't sure he had just heard what he thought he had heard. You're all sisters of the dark. You know me, and you all want to kill me. How can you break your oath to the Keeper? Ulyssia's iron gaze came up. I did not say that we wished to do that. I said we would like to swear loyalty to you in this, the world of life. I don't think, in view of the overall picture, that the two are incompatible. Not incompatible? Are you crazy, too? Her eyes took on an ominous set. Do you want to die? Do you want Kaelin to die? Richard made an effort to calm his racing mind. No. Then be quiet and listen. We have something you want. You have something we want. Each of us has conditions. For instance, you want Kaelin, but you want her alive and well, am I correct? Richard returned the ominous glare in kind. You know it is. But what makes you think I would make a pact with you? You tried to kill Prelate Annalena.
Not only tried, but succeeded.
Richard closed his eyes with an anguished groan. You admit to murdering her, and then you expect I would trust.
I'm running out of patience, young man, and your bride-to-be is running out of time. If you don't get her away before Jagang gets here, I can assure you, there is no hope you will ever see her again. You have no time to search.
Richard swallowed. All right, I'm listening.
You put the lock back on the Keeper's gateway to this world. You thwarted the plans we laid. In so doing, you diminished the Keeper's power in this world, restoring the balance between him and the Creator. In the balance you created, Jagang makes his move to take the world for himself. He has also taken us. He can come to us any time he wishes. We are his prisoners, no matter where we are. He has demonstrated to us just how unpleasant a captor he can be. There is no way for us to escape him but one.
You mean the bond to me?
Yes. Now, if we do as Jagang has instructed, then we continue on in his good graces, as it were. While it is unpleasant, at least we live. We want to live. If we swear fidelity to you, we can break the hold Jagang has on us and escape.
You mean you want to kill him? Richard observed. Ulyssia shook her head.
We want never to see his face again. We don't care what he does. We just want out of his clutches. I will tell you the truth of it. We will return to our work of bringing our master, the Keeper, to dominance. If we succeed, we will be rewarded. I don't know if it's possible for us to succeed, but that is the risk you will have to bear.
What do you mean, that's the risk I'll have to bear? If you're bonded to me, then you have to work toward my ends, fighting against the Keeper and the Imperial Order.
Ulyssia's lips spread with a cunning smile. No, my boy. I've thought this out very carefully. Here is my offer. We swear fidelity to you. You ask us where Kaelin is, and we tell you. In return, you can ask nothing else of us and must allow us to leave immediately. You won't see us, we won't see you.
But if you work to free the Keeper, that's against me and violates the bond. It won't work.
You are looking at it through your eyes. The protection your bond provides is invoked through the conviction of the person bonded. They're doing what they think is called for by their fidelity. You want to take the world. You think this is for the good of the people of the world. Have all the people you've tried to win to your side believed you and stayed to stand with you? Or have some seen your benevolent offers as something else, as abuse, and fled in fear of you?
Richard remembered the people leaving Aidendrill. I guess I can understand in a way, but
we don't view loyalty through your moral filter. We view our loyalty by our own standards. To our sensibilities as sisters of the dark, as long as we are doing nothing that is directly harming you, we will not be breaking our loyalty, because not harming you is definitely to your benefit. Richard put his fists on the table and leaned toward her.
You want to free the Keeper. That will harm me.
It's a matter of perception, Richard. It's power we want, the same as you. No matter the morals in which you wish to couch your ambition. Our efforts are not directed against you. If we should happen to succeed on behalf of the Keeper, everyone would be vanquished, including Jagang. So it won't matter if we incidentally lose the protection of the bond. It may not fit your mores, but it fits ours, so the bond will work. And who knows? It could even be that by some miracle, you might win your war against the Order and kill Jagang. Then we won't need a bond. We can have patience to see what will happen. Just don't be foolish enough to return to Adendrill. Jagang is taking it back, and there is nothing you can do to stop him.
Richard straightened and blinked down at her, trying to reason it out. But I would be setting you free to go out and work for evil.
Evil by your morals. The truth is, you would be giving us the chance to try, but that does not mean we will succeed. However, it also gives you Kaelin, and the chance to try to stop the Imperial Order, and to try to frustrate our attempts to win our struggle. You have thwarted us in the past. It buys each of us something very important. It buys us our freedom, and it buys Kaelin hers. A fair trade, I think.
Richard stood silently considering this mad offer. He was that desperate. So, if you bow down and offer me your fidelity, your bond, then you tell me where Kaelin is, and then you run off as you propose. What assurance have I that you have told me the truth of where Kaelin is?
Ulyssia cocked her head with a clever smile. Simple. We swear, you ask.
If we lie to your direct question, the bond would be broken, and we would be back in Jagang's clutches. What if I break my end, and after you tell me where Kaelin is, I make another demand of you? You would have to uphold it to remain bonded and be protected from Jagang.
That's why our offer carries the condition of only one question. Where is Kaelin? If you do more, then we will kill you, the same as if you turn us down. We will be no worse off than we are right now. You die, and Jagang gets Kaelin to do with as he will, and he will, I assure you. He has very perverse tastes.
Her gaze turned to the young woman beside her.
Just ask Marissa.
Richard looked at Marissa and saw the blood drain from her face. She tugged down her red dress enough to show him the top half of her breast. Richard felt the blood drain from his own face. He turned his eyes away.
He will only allow my face to be healed. The rest he orders left for his amusement. This is the least of what he did to me. The very least of what he did to me,
Marissa said in a bone-cold voice.
All because of you, Richard Rawl.
Richard had a flash of a vision of Kaelin with Jagang's ring through her lip and those lurid marks on her. His knees went weak. He pulled his lower lip through his teeth as he looked back to Ulyssia.
You aren't the prelate. Give me her ring.
Without hesitation, she pulled it off and handed it to him.
You want to swear loyalty? I get to ask where Kaelin is, and you must tell me true, and then you leave? That is our offer.
Richard heaved a sigh.
Bargain struck.
Ulyssia closed her eyes with a sigh of freedom after Richard shut the door on his way out. He was in a hurry. She didn't care. She had what she wanted. She was going to sleep without the fear of Jagang coming in the dream that was not a dream. Their five lives for one, quite a bargain. And she hadn't even had to tell him everything. She had had to tell him more than she wished. Still, quite a bargain.
Sister Ulyssia, Cecilia said, with a tone of surety in her voice that had been missing for months. You have done the impossible. You have broken Jagang's hold on us. The Sisters of the Dark are free, and it has cost us nothing.
Ulyssia took a deep breath.
I wouldn't be so sure of that.
We have just struck an uncharted course across untrodden ground in an unknown land.
But for now, we are free. We must not waste our chance. We must leave at once.
She glanced up as the door banged open. A grinning Captain Blake swaggered into the office. Two smirking sailors trailed in behind, one slowing to grope Armina on his way past. She made no attempt to ward off his hands. Captain Blake teetered before her. He placed his hands on the table and leaned over. She could smell liquor on his breath as he leered at her.
Well, well, lass, we meet again.
Ulyssia betrayed no emotion.
So we do.
His hungry gaze was too low to meet her eyes.
The lady's supper just made port. and we lonely sailors thought we should have some company for the night. The boys enjoyed the last time with you ladies so much that they thought to do it all over again."
She affected a timorous tone. "I hope you plan to be more gentle than the last time."
"Matter of fact, lass, the boys was saying how they didn't think we did all we could to enjoy ourselves."
He leaned over even more, reached out with his right hand, grabbed her nipple, and pulled her forward in her chair. He smiled at her cry.
"Now, before I get in an ugly mood, you whores get your behinds down to the Lady Sepha with us, where we can put them to good use."
Ulyssia brought her fist around and slammed a knife through the back of the captain's left hand, pinning it to the table. She touched a finger of her other hand to the ring in her lip, and with a flow of subtractive magic, it winked out of existence.
"Yes, Captain Blake, let's all of us go down to the Lady Sepha and have another very intimate visit with you and your crew."
With the fist of Han, she clouted him back, the knife embedded in the table slicing his hand in two as it was yanked away. A gag of air filled his mouth when he opened it to scream. Chapter 49.
"Something be going on out there," Addie whispered. "It must be them."
She fixed her white eyes on Kaelin.
"You be sure you wish to do this. I be willing, but we have to,"
Kaelin said, as she glanced at the fire to make sure it was still going strong.
"We must escape. If we can't escape and we're killed, well then, Richard won't be lured to come here to fall into their trap, and he can stay where he is, and, with Zed's help, protect the people of the Midlands."
Addie nodded.
"We try then,"
she sighed.
"I know I be right that she be doing it, but I do not know the reason."
Addie had told her that Lunetta did something very peculiar. She was shrouded in her power all the time. Such a task was so extraordinary, Addie had said, that it required the use of a talisman invested with magic. With Lunetta, that talisman could only be one thing.
"Like you said, Addie, even if you don't know the reason, she wouldn't do something like that if it weren't important."
Kaelin crossed her lips with a finger when she heard the squeak of the floor in the hall. Addie's gray and black jaw-length hair swayed as she quickly blew out the lamp and moved back behind the door. The fire still provided light, but the flickering flames made the shadows dance and would only add to the confusion. The door opened. Kaelin, standing to the opposite side of the door from Addie, took a deep breath, mustering her courage. She hoped they had removed the shield, or they were going to be in a lot of trouble for nothing. The two figures stepped into the room. It was them.
"What are you doing in here, you greasy little Nick?" Kaelin yelled.
Brogan, with Lunetta behind him, rounded on Kaelin. She spat in his eyes. His face gone red, he grabbed for her. Kaelin brought her boot up between his legs. When he cried out, Lunetta reached for him. From behind, Addie cracked a log across the squat sorceress's head. Brogan threw himself on Kaelin, grappling with her, punching her in the ribs. Addie snatched Lunetta's outfit of colored patches as she fell. The whole thing ripped as Addie, her mighty effort powered by desperation, rolled the nearly senseless woman out of her patchwork clothes. Lunetta, dazed and slow, cried out as Addie spun around with her prize and heaved it into the roaring fire. Kaelin saw the patches of colored cloth flame up in the hearth as she and Brogan toppled to the floor. She heaved him over the top of her as she crashed to the ground and then rolled to her feet. As Brogan turned to get his footing, she kicked him in the face. Lunetta squealed in distress. Kaelin kept her eyes on Brogan as he sprang up with blood running from his nose. Before he could charge at her again, he saw his sister behind Kaelin and froze. Kaelin darted a quick glance behind. A woman was pawing frantically at the fire, futilely trying to recover the flaming patches of colored cloth. The woman was not Lunetta. It was an attractive, older woman in a white shift. Kaelin's eyes went wide at the sight. What happened to Lunetta? Brogan screamed out in fury.
"Lunetta, how dare you do a glamour in front of others? How dare you use magic to make them think you be pretty? Stop it, at once! Your taint be ugly!"
"Lord General," she cried. My pretties be burning. Please, my brother, help me."
"You filthy Streganicha, stop it, I say."
"I can't," she wept. "I can't without my pretties."
With a growl of rage, Brogan slammed Kaelin aside and dashed to the fire. He lifted Lunetta by her hair and struck her with his fist. She fell back, knocking Addie to the floor with her. He kicked his sister as she tried to stand.
"I've had enough of your disobedience and your profane taint.
Kaelin snatched up a log and swung at him, but he ducked and it caught only his shoulders. His fist in her gut drove her back. Kaelin gasped to get her breath.
You ugly pig. Leave your beautiful sister alone. She be loony. Loony Lunetta.
Don't listen to him, Lunetta. Your name means Little Moon. Don't listen to him. Grogan screamed in fury and threw his hands out toward Kaelin. With a loud crack, lightning lit the room. It missed her only because he was raging out of control and striking wildly. Plaster and other debris blasted through the air. Kaelin was stunned near to paralysis. Tobias Brogan, the Lord General of the Blood of the Fold, the man committed to exterminating magic, had the gift. Screaming again, Brogan threw a fist of air that caught Kaelin square in the chest and slammed her against the wall. She crumpled to the floor, dazed and senseless. Lunetta shrieked louder when she saw what Brogan had done.
No, Tobias, you must not use the taint.
He fell on his sister, strangling her, pounding her head against the floor.
You be the one who did it. You be using the taint. You be using a glamour. You made the lightning.
No, Tobias, you be the one doing it. You must not use the gift. Mama told me you must not use it.
He lifted her by a fistful of her white shift.
What are you talking about? What did Mama tell you, you vile Streganicha?
The comely woman panted and gulped.
That you be the one, my brother. The one for greatness. She said I must not make people to notice me, so they would look only to you. She said you be the one who be important, but she said I must not let you use your gift.
Liar! Mama never said any such thing. Mama didn't know anything.
Yes, Tobias, she knew. She be touched with a little of the gift. The sisters came to take you away. We loved you and didn't want them to take our little Tobias.
I don't have the taint.
It be true, my brother. They said you had the gift, and they wanted to take you to the Palace of the Prophets. Mama told me that if they went back without you, they would bring others. We killed them, Mama and me. That be how you got the scar by your mouth, in our fight with them. She said we had to kill them so they wouldn't send others. She said, I must never let you use the gift, or they would come to take you.
Brogan's chest heaved with rage.
All lies. You did the lightning, and you be using a glamour for others.
No, she wept. They burned my pretties. Mama said you be destined to be great, but it could all be ruined. She taught me how to use the pretties to hide my looks and to keep you from using the gift. We wanted you to be great. My pretties be gone. You made the lightning.
Brogan stared off with wild eyes, as if seeing things none of the rest of them saw.
It not be the taint, he whispered. It just be me. The taint be evil. This not be evil. It just be me.
Brogan's eyes focused again as he saw Kaelin struggle to rise. The room flashed with blinding light as he threw another lightning bolt across the room. It raked the wall over her head as she dived for the floor. Brogan sprang to his feet to come for her.
Tobias, stop! You must not use your gift!
Tobias Brogan gazed back at his sister with an eerie calm.
This be a sign. The time has come. I always knew it would.
Blue flashes flickered between his fingertips as he held a hand up before his face.
This not be the taint, Lunetta, but divine power. The taint would be ugly. This be beautiful. The Creator has relinquished his right to dictate to me. The Creator be a baneling. I have the power now. The time has come to use it. I must sit in judgment of man now.
He turned to Kaelin.
I be the Creator now.
Lunetta lifted an imploring arm.
Tobias, please!
He wheeled back toward her, deadly snakes of light writhing at his hands.
What I have be glorious. I will hear no more of your filth and lies. You and Mama be banelings.
He drew his sword, the light coiling up the blade, and waved it in the air. She frowned with mental effort.
You must not use your power, Tobias. You must not.
The flickering light at his hands cut off.
I will use what be mine.
The light at his fingers ignited once more and danced up the blade.
I be the Creator now. I have the power, and I say you must die.
His eyes gleamed with madness as he stared transfixed at the light crackling at his fingertips.
Then you, Lunetta whispered, be the true baneling, and I must stop you as you have taught me."
A glowing line of rose-colored light flared from Lunetta's hand and pierced Tobias Brogan through the heart. In the smoky stillness, he drew a last gasp and collapsed. Not knowing what Lunetta would do, Kaelin didn't move, remaining as still as a fawn in the grass. Addie reached out with a tender hand, offering comforting words in their native tongue. Lunetta didn't seem to hear. She crawled woodenly to her brother's body and cradled his head in her lap. Kaelin thought she might be sick. Suddenly, Galtero stepped into the room. He snatched Lunetta by the hair and pulled her head back. He didn't see Kaelin in the rubble against the wall behind him.
"Striganicha," he whispered viciously.
Lunetta made no effort to resist. She seemed in a numb daze. Brogan's sword lay nearby. Kaelin dove for it. Frantic, she snatched up the sword. She wasn't fast enough. Galtero sliced his knife across Lunetta's throat. Before Lunetta had hit the floor, Kaelin ran him through. As he toppled, she yanked the sword free.
"Addie, are you hurt?"
"Not on the outside, child."
"I understand. But we don't have time for sorrow right now."
Kaelin grasped Addie's hand, and after carefully checking to ensure that Lunetta had indeed removed the shield before they had entered, the two of them stepped out into the hall. At either end lay the remains of a sister, their guards. Lunetta had killed them both. Kaelin heard boots clambering up the steps. She and Addie leapt over the bloody mess at the other end of the hall and dashed down the service stairs and out the back way. He looked about in the darkness, seeing no one, but hearing a commotion in the distance, the clash of steel. Together, hand in hand, they ran for their lives. Kaelin could feel tears coursing down her face. With her head down so the sister wouldn't recognize her, Anne crossed the distance in the dim light of the vaults. Zed trailed in her footsteps. The woman behind the table stood with a suspicious frown and marched forward.
"Who is it?" Sister Becky's voice was terse. "No one is allowed down here anymore. All have been warned."
Anne felt a thrust of Han smack her shoulder to bring her to a halt as Sister Becky rushed up before her. When Anne raised her head, Becky's eyes went wide. Anne drove the Dakra into her, and the eyes seemed to light from within before the woman went down. Zed leapt out to the side.
"You killed her! You just killed a pregnant woman!"
"You," Anne whispered, "condemned her to death.
I pray you have ordered the execution of a sister of the dark and not the light."
Zed wrenched her around by the arm.
"Have you lost your mind, woman?"
"I ordered the sisters of the light to get out of the palace. I told them they had to escape. I've begged you countless times to let me use the book. I needed to confirm that they have done as ordered. Since you refuse to allow me to use the journey book, I am forced to assume my instructions were carried out."
"That's no excuse to kill her. You could have simply incapacitated her."
"If my orders were followed, then she is a sister of the dark. I have no chance in a fair fight with one of them. Neither do you. We couldn't take the risk."
"And what if she's not one of the Keeper's sisters?"
"I can't risk everyone else on a mere chance."
Zed's eyes flashed with cold fury.
"You are mad!"
Anne lifted an eyebrow.
"Oh, and you would risk the lives of thousands to fret over one who you are reasonably sure was an enemy bent on stopping you? Did you get to be a wizard of the First Order by such choices?"
He released her arm.
"All right. You've gotten me here. What is it you want?"
"Check the vault first, to make sure there are no others."
They each stole down one side, Anne checking between the rows of bookshelves to watch the old wizard and make sure he was doing as instructed. If he tried to run, she could bring him back by the Rada Han, and he knew it. She liked Richard's grandfather, but need demanded she cultivate his hatred. For this, he had to be in a fury, and willingly take the chance she would give him. When they reached the rear of the gloomy vaults, they had found no others. Anne kissed her naked ring finger and thanked the Creator. She blocked the emotion of having killed Sister Becky, telling herself that she would not be guarding the vaults unless she were sworn to the Keeper and a pawn of the Emperor. She tried not to think of the innocent unborn child she had also killed.
"Now what?"
Zed snapped, when they met in the rear, near one of the small, restricted rooms.
"Nathan will do his part. I brought you here to do your part, the other half of what is needed. The palace is charged with a spell cast 3,000 years ago. I have been able to determine that it's a bifurcated web."
Zed's eyebrows went up.
His curiosity overcame his indignation.
That's quite a claim. I've never heard of anyone able to spin a bifurcated web. Are you sure?
No one now can spin such a web, but the wizards of old had such power. Zed drew a thumb down his smooth jaw as he stared off.
Yes, they would have had the power, I imagine.
His gaze returned to her eyes.
To what purpose?
The spell alters the grounds of the palace. The outer shield, where we left Nathan, is the shell encasing it all. It creates the environment in which this half can exist in this world. The spell here on this island is linked to other worlds. Among other things, it alters time. That's why we age more slowly than people living outside the spell. The old wizard pondered.
Yes, that would explain it.
Anne glanced away from his eyes. Nathan and I are both almost 1,000 years old. I have been prelate of the Sisters of the Light for nearly 8 centuries. Zed straightened his robes at his bony hips.
I've known of the spell, how it extends lifespans in order to give you the time to do your foul work.
Zed, when the wizards of old began jealously guarding their power and refused to train young men with the gift so as to prevent a threat to their domination, the Sisters of the Light were formed to help these young men lest they die. Not everyone likes the idea, but there it is. Without a wizard to help them, the task falls to us. We don't have the same Han as the male, and so it takes us a great deal of time to accomplish the task. The collar keeps them alive, keeps their gift from harming them, from driving them mad, until we can teach them what they need. The spell around the palace gives us the time we need. It was laid down for us 3,000 years ago, when a few wizards helped with our cause. They had the power to cast a bifurcated web. Zed was, for the moment, becoming intrigued.
Yes. Yes, I can see what you mean. Bifurcation would invert the force, kind of like twisting a length of gut, and create an area where the center could be bent to do extraordinary things. The ancient wizards could accomplish deeds I can only dream of doing.
Anne was keeping a constant watch to make sure they were alone.
Bifurcating a web bends it back on itself, creating an outer and inner region. There are two nodes, like with the twisted gut you mentioned, where this bending would have to take place, one at the outer shield and one at the inner.
Zed peered at her with one eye.
But the node on the inner half, where the true event takes place, would be vulnerable to breach. Though created by necessity, it would be a dangerous flaw. Do you know where the inner node is located?
We stand in it.
Zed straightened. He glanced around.
Yes, I can see the thought that went into it, placing it in the bedrock under everything else where it would be best protected.
That's why, on the off chance it could bring havoc, we unequivocally forbid wizard's fire anywhere on Hallsband Island.
Zed absently waved a hand.
Now, wizard's fire wouldn't harm such a node.
He turned to her with a suspicious glare.
What are we doing here?
I brought you here to give you the opportunity to do what you wish to do, to destroy the spell. He stared. He blinked, and he stared some more. At last he spoke.
No, it wouldn't be right.
Wizard Zorander, this is a highly inconvenient time for you to be overcome with morals.
He folded his skinny arms.
This spell was placed by wizards greater than I will ever be, greater than I can even imagine. This is a wonder, a thing of profound mastery. I won't destroy such a piece of work.
I broke the truce.
Zed lifted his chin.
Breaking the truce condemns any sister who comes to the new world to death. We are not in the new world. Breaking the truce says nothing about me going to the old world and doing harm. By the terms of the truce, I have no right to do such a thing.
She leaned closer with a dark look.
You promised me that if I took you away by that collar, endangering your friends, you would come to my homeland and lay waste to the palace of the prophets. I am giving you your chance.
It was a temporary passionate outburst. Reason has returned to my head.
He fixed her with a scolding scowl.
You've been using devious tricks and sly deception to try to convince me you're a vile, contemptible, immoral malefactor. But you have failed to fool me. You are not the evil sort. I've shackled you. I abducted you. I won't destroy your home and your life. Doing so, destroying the spell, would alter the pattern of the lives of the Sisters of the Light and, in essence, be ending their lives prematurely. The Sisters and their charges live by standards of time that to me seem strange but to them are normal. Life is perception. If a mouse with a lifespan of only a few years were to have the magic to make my life as short as its life, that, to my perception, would be killing me. Though to the mouse, it would seem he were granting no less than a normal lifespan. That's what Nathan meant when he said you were killing him. I would be shortening their lives to the same as the rest of us, but by their expectations and the oath they have taken, that would be the same as killing them before they have a chance to live. I won't do it.
If I have to, Wizard Zorander, I'll use the collar to give you pain until you agree.
He smirked.
You have no conception of the tests of pain I have passed to become a wizard of the First Order. Go ahead, do your best.
Anne pressed her lips together in exasperation.
But you have to. I've put a collar around your neck. I've done terrible things to you, to make you angry enough to do this. The prophecy says the anger of a wizard is necessary to destroy our home.
You've been playing me for a dancing frog.
His hazel eyes hovered closer.
I don't dance unless I know the tune.
Anne sagged in frustration.
The truth is that Emperor Jagang is going to take the Palace of the Prophets for his own use. He's a dreamwalker, and controls the minds of the Sisters of the Dark. He intends to use the prophecies to find the forks he needs to win the war, and then he's going to live under the spell for hundreds of years, ruling the world and everyone in it as his own.
Zed considered her with a scowl.
Now, that gets my blood to boiling. That's a worthy reason to level the palace. Bags, woman, why didn't you just tell me the truth in the beginning?
Nathan and I have been working on this fork in the prophecies for hundreds of years. The prophecy says a wizard will level the palace in fury. Failure is too dark a vision for the world to take any risk. So I did the thing I thought would work. I've been trying to make you furious enough to want to destroy the Palace of the Prophets.
Anne rubbed her tired eyes.
It was a desperate act because of a desperate need.
Zed grinned.
Desperate act. I like that.
I like a woman who can appreciate the occasional need for acts of desperation. Show spirit.
Anne clutched his sleeve.
Will you do it, then? We don't have any time to spare. The drums have stopped. Jagang could be here at any moment.
I'll do it. We'd better get back near the entrance, though.
When they were back near the huge round door to the vaults, Zed reached into a pocket and pulled out what appeared to be a stone. He tossed it on the floor.
What's that?
Zed glanced back over his shoulder.
Well, I conjecture you told Nathan to cast a light web.
Yes. Other than Nathan, a few sisters and myself, no one knows how to spin a light web. I think Nathan has enough power to breach the outer node once a cascade has begun on this inner one, but I know neither of us has the power to start the one needed in here. That's why I needed to bring you here. I fear only a wizard of the First Order will have the power necessary.
Well, I'll do my best, Zed grumbled. But I've got to tell you, Anne, as vulnerable as a node would be, it's still a spell cast by wizards, the vastness of whose power I can only imagine.
He spun his finger around, and the stone on the floor before him popped and snapped as it rapidly grew to a broad, flat rock. He stepped up onto it.
You get out of here. Go wait outside. Make sure Holly is safe while I do this. If anything goes wrong, and I can't control the cascade of light, you won't have time to get out of here.
Act of desperation, Zed?
He answered with a grunt as he turned back to the room and lifted his arms. Already sparkling colors were rising from the rock, engulfing him with spiraling shafts of humming light. Anne had heard of wizard's rocks, but she had never seen one and didn't know how they worked. She could feel the power that began emanating from the old wizard when he had stepped up on the thing. She hurried from the vault as he wished. She wasn't sure if he really wanted her out of the room for her own safety, or if he didn't want her to see how he was going to do such a thing. Wizards did tend to guard their secrets. Besides that, Zed was proving to be even more devious than Nathan, an achievement she would have thought impossible. Holly wrapped her thin little arms around Anne's neck when she squatted down by the dark niche.
Has anyone come past?
No, Anne,
Holly whispered.
Good. Let me squeeze in here with you while we wait until Wizard Zorander is finished with his task. He yells a lot and says a lot of bad words and waves his arms around like he's going to call a storm around us, but I think he's nice.
You aren't still itching from snow fleas. Anne smiled in the dark of a small hiding place among the rock.
But I think you may be right. My grandmama would get angry sometimes, like when people meant to hurt us. But you could tell she really meant it. Wizard Zorander doesn't really mean it. He's just pretending.
You are more perceptive than I have been, child. You're going to make a splendid sister of the light.
Anne held Holly's head to her shoulder as she waited in the silence. She hoped the wizard would hurry. If they were caught in the vaults, there was no way out, and a fight with Sisters of the Dark, despite his power, would prove more than dangerous. Time dragged on with agonizing stubbornness. Anne could tell by her slow, steady breathing that Holly had fallen asleep against her shoulder. Poor child hadn't been getting enough sleep. None of them had, rushing day and most of the nights, too, to get to Tanamura in time to beat Jigang to the palace. They were all exhausted. Anne started when there was a tug on her dress at her shoulder.
"Let's get out of here," said Whispered.
Pulling Holly with her, she squeezed back out of their hiding place.
"Did you do it?"
Zed, looking worse than merely vexed, glanced back through the huge round door to the vaults.
"I can't get the confounded thing to work. It's like trying to start a fire underwater."
She clutched his robes in a fist.
"Zed, we have to do this."
He turned his worried eyes to her.
"I know, but the ones who wove this web had subtractive magic. I have only additive. I've tried everything I know. The web around this place is stable beyond my ability to breach. It can't be done. I'm sorry."
"I've woven a light web in the palace. It can be done."
"I didn't say I didn't weave one. I said I can't get it to ignite. Not down here in the node, anyway."
"You tried to ignite it? Are you crazy?"
He shrugged.
"Act of desperation, remember? I had my suspicions about it working, so I had to test it. Good thing I did, or we would have thought it would work. It won't. It will ignite only for life. It won't expand and consume the spell."
Anne sagged.
"At least if anyone goes in there, hopefully Jigang, it will kill them. Until they discover it, anyway. And then they will drain the shield and have the vaults to do with as they will."
"It will cost them dearly. I've left a few tricks of my own in there. The place is a death trap."
"Is there nothing else we can do?"
"It's big enough to take down the entire palace, but I can't set it off. These Sisters of the Dark really can wield subtractive magic, as you say. We could ask one of them if they would try to ignite the light web for us."
Anne nodded.
"That's all we can do, then. We have to hope the things you left in there will kill them. Even if we can't destroy the palace, maybe that will be enough."
She took Holly's hand.
"We'd better get out of here. Nathan will be waiting. We must escape before Jigang arrives, or the sisters discover us."
Chapter 50 When she saw the flash of steel in the moonlight, Verna ducked behind a stone bench. The sounds of battle rolled up the lawns toward her from lower down on the palace grounds. Some of the others had told her that the crimson-caped soldiers had arrived not long ago to join with the Imperial Order, but they now seemed bent on killing everyone in sight. Two men in the crimson capes raced up out of the darkness. From the other direction, where she had seen the flash of steel, someone sprang out and in an instant had cut them down.
"It's two of the blood,"
a woman's voice whispered. The voice sounded familiar.
"Come on, Eddie."
Another thin form emerged from the shadows. The woman had used a sword, and Verna had her hand to defend herself. She took a chance and stood.
"Who is it? Show yourself!"
Moonlight glinted off the sword as it rose.
"Who wants to know?"
She hoped she wasn't taking a foolish chance, but there were friends among the women here. Still, she kept a firm grip on her dakra.
"It's Verna."
The shadowed figure paused.
"Verna? Sister Verna?"
"Yes. Who is it?"
she whispered back.
"Kaelin Amnell."
"Kaelin? It can't be."
Verna rushed out into the moonlight and lurched to a halt before the woman.
"Dear Creator, it is."
Verna threw her arms around her.
"Oh, Kaelin, I was so worried you were killed."
"Verna, you can't know how glad I am to see a friendly face."
"Who is it with you?"
An old woman stepped closer.
"A long time it has been, but I still remember you well, Sister Verna."
Verna stared, trying to place the face of the old woman.
"I'm sorry, but I don't recognize you."
"I be Addie. I was here for a time 50 years ago in my youth."
Verna's eyebrows went up.
"Addie,
I remember Addie.
Verna left unsaid that she remembered Addie as a rather young woman. She had learned long ago not to say such things aloud. Those from the outside world lived by a different pace of time.
I think you may remember my name, but not my face. It'd be a long time ago.
Addie embraced Verna in a warm hug.
You'll be one I remember. You'll be kind to me when I be here.
Halen interrupted the brief reminiscing.
Verna, what's going on here?
We were brought here by the blood of the fold, and have just managed to escape. We have to get out of here, but it seems the place is erupting in battle.
It's a long story, and I have no time right now to tell it all. I'm not sure I even know it all. But you're right, we must escape at once. The Sisters of the Dark have taken the palace, and Emperor Jagang of the Imperial Order is due to arrive at any time. I have to get the Sisters of the Light away from here at once. Come with us?
Halen scanned the lawns for trouble.
All right.
But I have to go get Ahern. He's been steadfast. I can't leave him behind. He'll be wanting to get his team and coach if I know Ahern.
I still have sisters out collecting all those loyal, Verna said. We're to meet just over there, on the other side of that wall. The guard hiding on the other side, beside the gate, is loyal to Richard, as are all the rest guarding the gates in that wall. His name is Kevin. He can be trusted. When you get back, just tell him you're a friend of Richard. It's a code he knows. He'll let you into the compound.
Loyal to Richard?
Yes. Hurry. I have to go inside to get a friend out. You can't let your man bring his team through this way, though. The palace grounds are becoming a battlefield. He'll never make it. The stables are at the north end. That's the way we're leaving. I have sisters guarding the small bridge there. Have him head north to the first farm on the right, with a stone wall around the garden. That's our secondary meeting place, and it's secure, for the moment anyway.
I'll hurry, Kaelin said. Verna caught her arm.
We can't wait for you if you don't get back here in time. I must get a friend, and then we must escape.
I don't expect you to wait. Don't worry, I have to get away too. I think I'm the bait to draw Richard here.
Richard?
Another long story, but I have to get away before they can use me to lure him here. The night suddenly lit, as if by silent lightning, except it didn't go out like lightning. They all turned to the southeast and saw massive balls of flame boiling up into the night sky. Thick black smoke billowed into the air. It seemed the entire harbor was aflame. Huge ships were thrown into the air atop colossal columns of water. The ground suddenly shook, and at the same time the air boomed with the rumbling sound of distant explosions.
Dear spirits, Kaelin said.
What's going on? She glanced about.
We're running out of time. Addie, stay with the sisters. I hope to be back soon.
I can get the Radahan off, Verna called out, but too late.
Kaelin had already dashed away into the shadows. Verna took Addie's arm.
Come on, I'll take you to some of the other sisters behind the wall. One of them will get that thing off you while I go inside.
Verna's heart pounded as she slipped through the halls inside the Prophet's compound after leaving Addie with the others. As she moved deeper into the dark halls, she braced herself for the possibility that Warren was dead. She didn't know what they had done to him, or if they had decided to simply eliminate him. She didn't think she could endure it if she were to find his body. No, Jagang wanted a prophet to help him with the books. Han had warned her, what seemed ages ago, to get him away at once. The thought entered her mind that maybe Anne wanted her to get Warren away to keep the Sisters of the Dark from killing him because he knew too much. She put the troubling thoughts from her mind as she scanned the halls for any sign that a Sister of the Dark might have slipped into the building to hide from the battle. Before the door to the Prophet's apartments, Verna took a deep breath and then moved into the inner hall through the layers of shields that had kept Nathan a prisoner in the place for near to 1,000 years and now kept Warren. She breached the inner door into the gloom. The far double doors to the Prophet's small garden stood open, letting in the warm night air and a shaft of moonlight. A candle on a side table was lit, but provided little illumination. Verna's heart pounded as she saw someone rise from a chair.
Warren?
Verna, he brushed forward. Thank the Creator you escaped.
Verna felt a clutch of dismay as her hopes and longings sparked her old fears. She retreated from the brink. She shook a finger at him.
What kind of foolishness was that, sending me your Dakra? Why didn't you use it and save yourself, to escape? That was reckless, sending it to me. What if something had happened? You already had it, and you let it out of your hands. What were you thinking?
He smiled.
I'm glad to see you too, Verna.
Verna dammed up her feelings behind a gruff reply.
Answer my question.
Well, first of all, I've never used a Dacra, and worried I might do something wrong, and then we would lose our only chance. Secondly, I have this collar around my neck, and unless I get it off, I can't get through the shields. I feared that if I couldn't get Leoma to take it off, if she would rather die than do it, then it would all be for naught. Third, he said, taking a tentative step toward her, if only one of us was to have a chance to get away, I wanted it to be you. Verna stared at him a long moment, a lump rising in her throat. She could help herself no longer and threw her arms around his neck.
Warren, I love you. I mean, I really, truly love you.
He embraced her tenderly.
You have no idea how long I dreamed of hearing you say those words, Verna. I love you, too. What about my wrinkles?
He smiled a sweet, warm, glowing Warren smile.
Someday, when you get wrinkles, I'll love them, too.
For that and everything else, she let herself go and kissed him. A small knot of crimson-caped men burst around the corner, intent on killing him. He spun into them, kicking one in the knee as he brought his knife up into the gut of a second. Before their swords could block him, he had cut another's throat and broken a nose with an elbow. Richard was livid, lost in the thundering rage of the magic storming through him. Even though the sword wasn't with him, the magic was still his. He was the true seeker of truth, and was bonded irrevocably to its magic. It coursed through him with lethal vengeance. The prophecies had named him Fuergrisa Ost Draca, High Daharan for the bringer of death, and he moved now like its shadow. He understood the words now as they had been written. He whirled through the men of the Blood of the Fold as if they were mere statues toppling before a ruinous wind. In a moment all was silent again. Richard panted in rage as he stood over the bodies, wishing they were Sisters of the Dark instead of their minions. He wanted those five. They had told him where Kaelin had been held, but when he arrived, she was gone. Smoke still hung in the air from the battle. The room had been raked by what looked to be the furor of magic unleashed. He had found the bodies of Brogan, Galtero, and a woman he didn't recognize. Kaelin, if she had been there, might have escaped, but he was frantic with apprehension that she had been spirited away by the sisters, that she was still a captive, and that they would hurt her, or worse yet, that they would give her to Jagang. He had to find her. He needed to get his hands on a Sister of the Dark so he could make her talk. Around the palace grounds a confusing battle raged. It appeared to Richard that the Blood of the Fold had turned on everyone in the palace. He had seen dead guards, dead cleaning staff, and dead sisters. He had also seen a great many dead of the blood. The Sisters of the Dark scythed them down mercilessly. Richard had seen one charge of near to 100 men cut down in an instant by one sister. He had also seen a relentless charge of men from all directions overrun another sister. They tore her apart like a pack of dogs at a fox. When he reached the sister who had cut down the attack, she had vanished, and so he was looking for another. One of them was going to tell him where Kaelin was. If he had to kill every Sister of the Dark at the palace, one of them was going to talk. Two Blood of the Fold caught sight of him and came up the path at a dead run. Richard waited. Their swords caught only air. He took them down with his knife almost without thinking about it, and was moving again before the second man had finished pitching face first to the ground. He had lost track of the number of the Blood of the Fold he had killed since the battle had begun. He ripped through them only if they attacked him. He wasn't able to avoid all the soldiers he saw. If they came at him, it was by their choice, not his. It wasn't them he wanted, it was a sister. Near a wall, Richard hugged the moon shadows beneath a clump of aromatic, spreading witch hazels as he moved toward one of the covered walkways. He flattened against a pilaster in the wall as he saw a shape dart from the walkway. As it approached, he could tell by the flow of hair and the shape that it was a woman. At last, he had a sister. When he stepped out in front of her, he saw the flash of a blade slashing toward him. He knew that every sister carried a Dacra. It was probably that rather than a knife. He also knew how deadly a Dacra was, and how skilled they were with the weapon. He dared not take the hazard lightly. Richard whipped his leg around, kicking the weapon from her hand. He would have broken her jaw so she couldn't cry out for help, but he needed her to be able to talk. If he was fast enough, she would raise no alarm. He caught her wrist, sprang up behind her back, snatched her other fist as she brought it up to hit him, and clamped her wrist together with one hand. He swept his knife arm around her throat and with a yank toppled back. As he landed on his back, with her atop his chest, he hooked his legs over hers to keep her from kicking him. She was pinned and helpless in a heartbeat. He pressed the blade to her throat. "I'm in a very bad mood," he said through gritted teeth.
If you don't tell me where the Mother Confessor is, you are going to die. She panted, catching her breath.
You are about to slit her throat, Richard.
For what seemed an eternity, his mind, filtering her words through his fury, tried to make sense of what she had said. It seemed a riddle to him.
Are you going to kiss me, or are you going to cut my throat? She asked, still panting.
It was Kaylin's voice. He released her wrists. She turned around, her face inches from his.
It was her. It was really her. Dear spirits, thank you,
he whispered before he kissed her. His fury stilled like a lake becalmed on a moonlit summer night. With aching bliss, he held her to him. His fingers gently touched her face, touching his dream come to life. Her fingers trailed along his cheek as she gazed at him, needing words no more than he. For a moment, the world stopped.
Kaylin, he said at last, I know you're angry with me, but, well, if I hadn't broken my sword and had to pick up a knife, you wouldn't have had such an easy time. But I'm not angry.
That's not what I meant. I can explain.
I know what you meant, Richard. I'm not angry. I trust you.
You have some explaining to do, but I'm not angry. The only thing you could do to make me angry would be if you ever get more than 10 feet from me for the rest of your life. Richard smiled.
You aren't going to ever be angry with me then.
His smile withered as his head thumped back to the ground.
Oh, yes, you are. You don't know the trouble I've caused. Dear spirits, I've...
She kissed him again, tender, soft, warm. He ran his hand down the back of her long, thick hair. He held her away by her shoulders.
Kaylin, we have to get out of here, right now. We're in a lot of trouble. I'm in a lot of trouble.
Kaylin rolled off him and sat up.
I know. The order is coming. We need to hurry.
Where's Zed and Gretch? Let's get them and be gone. Her head tilted toward him.
Zed and Gretch? They aren't with you?
Me? No, I thought they were with you. I sent Gretch with a letter.
Dear spirits, don't tell me you didn't get the letter.
No wonder you aren't angry with me.
I got the letter.
Zed used a spell to make himself light enough for Gretch to carry him. Gretch took Zed back to Adendrill weeks ago. Richard felt a hot wave of nausea. He remembered the dead Mriswith all over the rampart at the keep.
I never saw them, he said in a whisper.
Maybe you left before they arrived. It must have taken you weeks to get here.
I only left Adendrill yesterday.
What? She whispered, wide-eyed.
How could...
The Sliff brought me. She got me here in less than a day. At least, I think it was less than a day. It may have been two. I had no way of telling, but the moon looked the same. Richard realized he was rambling and made himself stop. Kaylin's face was becoming watery in his vision. His voice sounded hollow to him, as if it were someone else speaking. I found a place on the keep where there had been a fight. There were dead Mriswith all over. I remember thinking it looked like Gretch had killed them. It was at the edge of a high wall. There was blood at a notch in the wall and all down the side of the keep. I ran my finger through the blood. Mriswith blood stinks. Some of the blood wasn't from a Mriswith. Kaylin took him in her comforting arms.
Zed and Gretch, he whispered.
That must have been them. Her arms tightened.
I'm sorry, Richard.
He lifted her arms away and stood, giving her a hand up.
We have to get out of here. I've done something terrible, and Adendrill is in trouble. I've got to get back there.
Richard's gaze caught on the Radahan.
What's this doing around your neck?
I was captured by Tobias Brogan. It's a long story. Even before she had finished speaking, he curled his fingers around the collar. Without cognitive reasoning but through the need and fury, he felt the power swell from the calm center and surge through his arm. The collar shattered in his hand like sun-baked dirt. Kaylin's fingers groped at her neck. She let out a sigh of relief verging on a wail.
It's back, she whispered as she leaned against him, putting a hand to her breastbone. I can feel my confessor's power. I can touch it again.
He squeezed her with one arm.
We better get out of here. I've just gone and freed Ahern. That's where I broke my sword, on one of the blood.
He took a bad fall, she explained to his frown.
I told Ahern to head north with the sisters.
Sisters? What sisters?
I found Sister Verna. She's gathering the Sisters of the Light, the young men, novices, and guards, and escaping with them. I'm on my way to meet her. I left Addy with them. Hurry, and we may be able to catch them before they leave. They're not far.
Kevin's mouth dropped when he stepped out from behind the wall to challenge the two of them.
Richard, he whispered. Is it really you?
Richard smiled. Sorry, I don't have any chocolates, Kevin. Kevin pumped Richard's hand.
I'm loyal, Richard. Nearly all the guards are loyal.
Richard frowned in the dark. I'm honored, Kevin. He turned and called out in a loud whisper.
It's Richard!
A crowd gathered around after he and Kaelin had slipped through the gate and behind the wall. In the flickering light of distant fires down at the docks, Richard saw Verna and threw his arms around her.
Verna, I'm so glad to see you.
He held her out at arm's length.
But I have to tell you, you need a bath.
Verna laughed. It was a rare good sound to hear. Warren squeezed past her and with a gleeful laugh embraced Richard. Richard held Verna's hand out and pressed the prelate's ring into it, closing her fingers around it.
I heard about Anne dying. I'm so sorry. This is her ring. I think you would know better than I what to do with it.
Verna brought the hand closer to her face, staring at the ring.
Richard, where did you get this?
I made Sister Ulyssia give it to me. She had no business wearing it.
You made?
Verna was named Prelate Richard, Warren said as he put a reassuring hand to her shoulder. Richard grinned. I'm proud of you, Verna. Put it back on, then.
Richard, Anne isn't... The ring was taken from me. I was convicted by a tribunal and removed as prelate.
Sister Dulcinea stepped forward.
Verna, you are the prelate. At the trial, every sister here with us voted with you.
Verna searched all the faces watching her.
You did?
Yes,
Sister Dulcinea said.
We were overruled by the others, but we all believed in you. You were named by Prelate Annalena. We need a prelate. Put the ring back on.
Verna nodded her tearful gratitude to the sisters as they voiced their agreement. She slipped the ring back on her finger and kissed it.
We have to get everyone away at once. The Imperial Order is coming to take the palace.
Richard gripped her arm and pulled her back around.
What do you mean the Imperial Order is coming to take the palace? What do they want with the Palace of the Prophets?
The prophecies.
Emperor Jigang intends to use them to know the forks in the books so he can alter events to his advantage.
The other sisters behind Verna gasped. Warren slapped a hand over his face as he groaned.
And, Verna added, he plans to live here, under the palace's spell, so he can rule the world after the prophecies help him crush all opposition.
Richard released her arm.
We can't let him do that. We would be frustrated at every fork. We wouldn't have a chance. The world would suffer under his tyranny for centuries.
There's nothing we can do about it, Verna said. We have to get away or we'll all be killed here, and then there's no chance for us to help, to think of a way to fight back.
Richard swept his gaze across the gathered sisters, many of whom he knew, and then looked back to Verna.
Prelate, what if I were to destroy the palace?
What? How can you do that?
I don't know. But I destroyed the towers, and they were made by the wizards of old, too. What if there were a way?
Verna licked her lips as she stared off. The crowd of sisters stood silent. Sister Phoebe pushed her way through the others.
Verna, you can't allow it!
It may be the only way to stop Jigang.
But you can't, Phoebe said, on the verge of tears. It's the Palace of the Prophets. It's our home.
It's going to be the Dreamwalker's home now if we leave it for him.
But Verna,
Phoebe said, gripping Verna's arms.
Without the spell, we will grow old. We'll die, Verna. Our youth will be gone in a twinkling. We'll get old and die before we have a chance to live.
With a thumb, Verna wiped a tear from the other's face.
Everything dies, Phoebe, even the palace. It can't live forever. It has served its purpose, and now, if we don't do something, its purpose will turn to harm.
Verna, you can't do this. I don't want to get old.
Verna hugged the young woman.
Phoebe, we're sisters of the light. We serve the Creator in his work to make the lives of the people in this world better. The only chance we have to better their lives now is to become like the rest of the Creator's children, to live among them. I understand your fear, Phoebe, but trust in me that it won't be as you fear. Time feels different to us under the spell of the palace. We don't feel the slow passing of centuries the way those outside imagine, but the rapid pace of life. It really doesn't feel much different when you live outside.
Our oath is to serve, not simply to live long.
If you wish to live a long and empty life, Phoebe, you can remain with the Sisters of the Dark. If you wish to live a meaningful, helpful, fulfilled life, then come with us, with the Sisters of the Light, to our new life beyond what has been.
Phoebe stood silent, tears running down her cheeks. Off in the distance, fire roared, and occasional explosions punctuated the night. The cries of men at battle were coming closer. At last Phoebe spoke.
"I am a sister of the light. I wish to go with my sisters. Wherever that takes us, the Creator will still watch over us."
Verna smiled, running a tender hand down Phoebe's cheek.
"Anyone else?" she asked, looking among the others gathered. "Does anyone else have any objection? If you do, it must be heard now. Don't come to me later and say you didn't have the chance. I give it now."
All the sisters shook their heads. Soon they were all voicing their wish to go. Verna twisted the ring on her finger as she looked up at Richard.
"Do you think you can destroy the palace, the spell?"
"I don't know. You remember when you first came for me and Kaelin used that blue lightning? Confessors have an element of subtractive magic from the wizards who created their power. Maybe that will do some harm to the vaults if I can't."
Kaelin's fingers touched his back as she whispered,
"Richard, I don't think I can do that. That magic was invoked for you, to defend you. I can't call it for anything else."
"We have to try. If nothing else, we can set the prophecies afire. If we start a fire among all those books, they'll all be consumed. And then at least Jigang can't use them against us."
A small group of women and half a dozen young men came rushing up to the gate.
"Friends of Richard," came the urgent whisper.
Kevin opened the gate, letting the breathless group in. Verna clutched a woman's arm.
"Philippa, did you find them all?"
"Yes."
The tall woman paused to catch her breath.
"We have to get out of here. The Emperor's advance guard are in the city. Some are already coming across the south bridges. The Blood of the Fold are engaging them in pitched battle."
"Did you see what's going on at the docks?" Verna asked.
"Ulyssia and some of her sisters are down there. Those women are ripping the entire harbor apart. It looks like the underworld unleashed."
Philippa put trembling fingers to her lips as she closed her eyes for a moment.
"They have the men from the Lady Sepha," her voice faltered. "You can't imagine what they're doing to those poor men."
Philippa turned, dropped to her knees, and vomited. Two of the other sisters who had returned with her did the same.
"Dear Creator," Philippa managed between retches, "you cannot conceive of it. I will have nightmares the rest of my life."
Richard turned to the shouts and cries of battle.
"Verna, you have to get out of here right now. There's no time to waste."
She nodded.
"You and Kaelin can catch up with us."
"No. Kaelin and I have to get to Adendril at once. I don't have time to explain right now, but she and I have the magic required that will allow it. I wish I could take the rest of you, but I can't. Hurry. Head north. There's an army of 100,000 Daharan soldiers heading south looking for Kaelin. You'll have more protection with them, and they with you. Tell General Rybish that she is safe with me."
Addie stepped through the others and took Richard's hands.
"I'll be Zed."
Richard's voice caught in his throat. He closed his eyes against the pain.
"Addie, I'm sorry, but I haven't seen my grandfather. I fear he may have been killed at the keep."
Addie wiped her cheek as she cleared her throat.
"I be sorry, Richard,"
she whispered in her raspy voice.
"Your grandfather be a good man, but he takes too many desperate chances. I have warned him."
Richard hugged the old sorceress as she wept softly against his chest. Kevin came in a rush from the gate, sword in hand.
"We either have to go now or we have to fight."
"Go," Richard said. "We won't win this war if you die in this battle. We must fight by our rules, not Jigang's. He'll have those with the gift with him, not just soldiers."
Verna turned to the gathered sisters, novices, and young wizards. She took the hands of two young girls who looked to be in need of reassurance.
"All of you, listen. Jigang is a dreamwalker. The only protection is our bond to Richard. Richard has been born with the gift, and with a magic passed down from his ancestors that protects against dreamwalkers. Leoma tried to break that bond to allow Jigang to enter my mind and take me. Before we go, all of you, bow down and swear fidelity to Richard, to be certain we will be protected from our enemy."
"If it is your wish to do this," Richard said, "then do it as was set down by Ulrich Rall, the one who created the bond and its protection. If you wish to do this, then I ask you to give the devotion as it was passed down, as it was meant to be."
Richard told them the words, as he had said them himself, and then stood silent, feeling the weight of responsibility, not only to those gathered, but to the thousands in Adendril who were depending on him, as the Sisters of the Light and their charges went to their knees, and with one voice rising into the night above the sound of battle proclaimed their bond.
Master Rawl guide us. Master Rawl teach us. Master Rawl protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. Chapter 51. Richard pressed Kaelin up against the wall in the dank, dark stone corridor as he waited for the knot of crimson-caped soldiers to pass the intersection. As the echo of their boots faded in the distance, Kaelin stretched up on her toes and whispered,
"I don't like it down here. Are we going to be able to get out of this place alive?"
He pressed a quick kiss to the worry lines on her brow.
"Of course we're going to get out of here alive. I promise."
He took her hand and ducked under a low beam.
"Come on, the vaults are just ahead."
The stone of the bleak passageway was streaked with pale yellow stains where water leaked between joints and over the blocks. In places on the ceiling, drops of water hung from stone icicles the color of egg yolk to drip occasionally onto ripply stone mounds on the floor. Beyond two torches, the passageway widened and the ceiling rose up to accommodate the huge round door to the vaults. As they came in sight of the 6-foot-thick stone door, Richard knew something was wrong. Not only could he see an eerie light beyond, but the hairs at the back of his neck were standing on end, and he could feel the whisper of magic against his arms, like spider webs brushing the hairs. He rubbed the tickling sensation on his arms as he leaned close.
"Do you feel anything odd?"
She shook her head.
"But there's something funny about the light."
Kaelin's step faltered. Richard saw the body at the same time as they approached the round opening into the vaults. Ahead, a woman lay curled up on the floor as if she were asleep, but Richard knew she wasn't sleeping. She was as still as the stone. As they stepped closer, they could see beyond the wall to the right that there were near to a dozen dead Blood of the Fold scattered about the floor. Richard winced at the sight, and a queasy feeling settled in his stomach. Each man was sliced cleanly in half, armor, cape, and all at mid-chest. The floor was a lake of blood. His apprehension burgeoned with every slow step toward the round opening in the rock.
"Look, I have to go get something first," he said. "You wait here until I get back. Should only take a few minutes."
Kaelin tugged him back by his shirt sleeve.
"You know the rules."
"What rules?"
"You're not allowed to get more than 10 feet from me for the rest of your life, or I get angry."
Richard stared into her green eyes.
"I'd rather have you angry than dead."
Her brow drew down in a scowl.
"You only think that now. I've been waiting too long to be with you to let you go off by yourself now. What's so important that would make you want to go in there? We can try to do something from out here. Throw in torches, set the place ablaze or something. All that paper should burn like tinder grass. We don't need to go in there."
Richard smiled.
"Did I ever tell you how much I love you?"
She cuffed his arm.
"Talk! What are we risking our lives for?"
Richard yielded with a sigh.
"There's a book of prophecy in the back. It's over 3,000 years old. It has prophecies in it about me. It helped me before. If we're successful at destroying all these books, I'd like to at least take that one with us. It may be a help again."
"What's it say about you?"
"It calls me Fuergrisa Ost Draka."
"What does that mean?"
Richard turned back to the vault.
"The bringer of death." She was silent a moment.
"So, how do we get back there?"
Richard surveyed the dead soldiers.
"Well, for sure, we don't walk."
He held his hand up to his chest.
"Something cut them down at about this high. Whatever we do, we don't stand up."
At about that height, a wafer-thin haze, like a stratified layer of smoke, hung in the air in the vault room. It seemed to be glowing, as if lit from something, but Richard couldn't tell what. On their hands and knees, they crawled into the vault and under the strange blush of light. They stayed near the wall until they reached the bookshelves, so they wouldn't have to crawl through the pools of blood. Once beneath the glowing haze, it seemed even more peculiar. It didn't seem to be like any fog or smoke Richard had ever seen before. It seemed to be made of light. A grating sound caused them to pause, motionless. Richard looked back over his shoulder and saw the 6-foot-thick stone door swinging closed. He judged that no matter how fast they moved, they wouldn't be able to make it back before the door closed shut. Kaelin turned from the door.
"Are we locked in here? How are we going to get out? Is there another way out?"
"It's the only way out, but I can open it," Richard said. "The door works in conjunction with a shield. If I put my hand to the metal plate on the wall, it'll open." Her green eyes studied his face.
"Richard, are you sure?"
"Pretty sure. It always worked in the past."
"Richard, after all we've been through, now that we're together,
I want both of us to get out of here alive.
We will. We have to. There are people who need our help.
In Aidendrill?
He nodded, trying to find the words for what he had been wanting to say to her, words to fill the space he feared was between them, the space he feared he had put there.
Kaelin, I didn't do what I did there because I wanted something for myself, I swear. I want you to know that. I know how much I've hurt you, but it was the only thing I could think to do before it was too late. I only did it because I truly believe that it's our only chance to keep the Midlands from falling to the Imperial Order. I know that the goal of the Confessors is to protect people, not to simply hold dominion. I trusted that you would see that I was acting on those goals, if not your wishes. I wanted to protect people, not rule them. But I've been heartsick over what I've done to you. Dead silence stretched in the stone room for a long moment.
Richard, when I first read your letter, I was crushed. A sacred trust was placed in my hands, and I didn't want to be known as the Mother Confessor who lost the Midlands. On the way here, with that collar around my neck, I've had a lot of time to think. The sisters did something noble tonight. They've sacrificed a 3,000-year legacy for a higher purpose, to help people. I may not be happy about what you did, and you still have some explaining to do, but I'll listen with love in my heart, not just for you, but for the people of the Midlands who need us. Over the weeks as we traveled here, I thought about how we must live in the future and not the past. I want the future to be a place where we can live in peace and safety. That's more important than anything else. I know you, and I know that you wouldn't do as you did for selfish reasons.
Richard brushed the backs of his fingers down her cheek.
I'm proud of you, Mother Confessor. She kissed his fingers. Later, when people aren't trying to kill us and we have the time, I'll fold my arms and frown and tap my foot like the Mother Confessor is supposed to, while you stutter and stammer and try to explain the sense of what you did. But for now, could we just get out of this place?
His worry eased. Richard smiled and started off again, crawling past the rows of bookcases. A thin layer of glowing haze over their heads seemed to stretch across the entire room. Richard wished he knew what it was. Kaelin hurried closer to his side. Richard checked for trouble down each row they passed, guiding them around the inexplicable feel of danger whenever he encountered it. He didn't know if the sense of danger was a true perception or not, but he dared not ignore the feelings. He was learning to trust in his instincts and be less concerned with proof. When they entered the small alcove in the back, he scanned the books on the shelf and saw the one he wanted. The problem was that it was above the level of the haze. He knew better than to try to reach through it. He didn't know exactly what the glow of light was, but he knew it was magic of some sort, and he had seen what it had done to the soldiers. With Kaelin's help, they rocked the bookcase until it fell over. When it toppled against the table, the books pitched out, but the one he wanted landed on the table. A layer of glowing haze hovered mere inches above the book. Richard carefully eased his hand along the tabletop, feeling the tingling sensation of the magic floating just above his arm. At last, he caught the book with his fingers and drew it off the edge.
Richard, something's wrong.
He picked up the book and thumbed through it quickly to confirm that it was the right one. Though he could read the Haidaharan words now, and he recognized some of them, he didn't have time to address what the book said.
What? What's wrong? Look at the fog over us. When we came in, it was chest high. It must have been what cut down those men. Look at it now.
Without his noticing, it had descended to just above the table. He tucked the book under his belt.
Follow me and hurry.
Richard scrambled out of the room with Kaelin right at his heels. He didn't know what would happen if the glowing magic reached them, but he didn't have much trouble imagining. Kaelin cried out. Richard turned and saw her sprawled flat on the floor.
What is it?
She tried to drag herself ahead by her elbows, but went nowhere.
Something has me by my ankle.
Richard clambered back to her and grabbed her wrist.
It let go. As soon as you touched me, it let go.
Grab hold of my ankle and let's get out of here. She gasped.
Richard, look!
The glow over their heads had lowered when he touched her, as if the magic had felt the touch, felt its prey, and was lowering in pursuit. It barely gave them room to crawl. Richard, with Kaelin holding his ankle, raced for the door. Before they reached the door, the line of light overhead lowered until Richard could feel its heat against his back.
Get down!
She flattened to her stomach when he ordered it, and they squirmed forward on their bellies. When they at last reached the door, Richard flopped over on his back. The haze hovered inches above them. Kaelin grabbed a hold of his shirt and pulled herself close.
Richard, what are we going to do?
Richard stared up at the metal plate. It
was above the glowing layer that extended from wall to wall. He could no longer get to the plate without reaching through the menacing light over them.
"We have to get out of here, or that thing is going to kill us, just like it killed those men. I have to stand."
"Are you crazy? You can't do that."
"I have the Mriswith cape. Maybe if I use that, the light won't find me."
Halen threw an arm over his chest.
"No!"
"I'm dead anyway if I don't try."
"Richard, no!"
"Do you have a better idea? We're running out of time."
She growled in anger and extended her arm toward the door. Blue lightning exploded from her fist. The door sizzled with streaks of blue light racing around the perimeter of the door. The thin layer of hazy light recoiled back as if alive, and the touch of her magic was painful. The door, however, didn't move. As the light retreated, bunching in the center of the room, Richard sprang up and slapped a hand to the plate. The door groaned and began to move. The crackling blue flashes from Kaelin died out as the door inched open. The globe began to flatten and spread once more. Richard snatched Kaelin's hand. He stood and squeezed through the opening, pulling her with him. They fell to the ground once outside, panting and holding on to one another.
"It worked," she said, catching her breath from the fright. "I knew you were in danger, so my magic worked."
As the door opened the rest of the way, a slick of light seeped into the corridor toward them.
"We have to get out of here," he said as they came to their feet.
They trotted backward, keeping an eye on the creeping fog that pursued them. They both grunted when they smacked into an invisible barrier. Richard groped along its surface, but could find no opening. He turned back to see the light almost upon them. With a rage of need, without thought, Richard threw his hands out. Ropes of black lightning, undulating voids in the existence of light and life, like eternal death itself, blasted outward, twisting and curling away from his outstretched hands. The crack of lightning as the subtractive magic ripped into the world was deafening. Kaelin winced. She covered her ears and shrank from the sight. In the center of the vaults, the hazy glow seemed to ignite. He felt a powerful, low-pitched thump in his chest and a stone beneath his feet. The bookshelves were blown back, flinging a blizzard of papers into the air to flame briefly like thousands of sparks from a bonfire. The light howled as if alive. He could feel the black lightning exploding from within himself, power and fury beyond his comprehension, burning through him and twisting into the vault. Kaelin tugged on his arms.
"Richard! Richard, we have to run! Richard, listen to me! Run!"
Kaelin's voice sounded as if it came to him from a great distance. The black ropes of subtractive magic abruptly ceased. The world returned, rushing into the void of his awareness, and he felt alive again, alive and aghast. The invisible barrier blocking their escape was gone. Richard snatched Kaelin's hand and ran. Behind, the core of light tumbled and wailed, brightening all the time as the sound rose in pitch. "Dear spirits," he thought, "what have I done?" They ran through the stone corridors, upstairs and through halls that became more elaborate at each level, paneled and carpeted, with lamps lighting their way instead of torches. Ahead of them, their shadows stretched out, but it wasn't from the lamps. It was from the living light behind. They burst through a door, out into a night alive with battle. Men wearing crimson capes fought bare-armed men Richard had never seen before. Some wore beards, and many a head was shaved smooth, but each had a ring through his left nostril. In their strange leather belts and straps, some studded with spikes and layers of hides and fur, they looked to be wild, savage men, an impression aided by the way they fought. Gruesome smiles bared gritted teeth as they swung swords, axes, and flails, slogging into their opponents, sweeping aside strikes and pushing ahead with round bucklers set with long center spikes. Though he had never seen the men before, Richard knew they had to be the Imperial Order. Richard didn't slow, but wove his way through openings in the battle, pulling Kaelin behind as he raced for a bridge. When one of the Imperial Order soldiers lunged at him, driving a boot toward him to stop him, Richard sidestepped, hooked his arm under the man's leg, and flipped him aside, hardly slackening his headlong rush. When one of the Order's soldiers came at him, Richard drove an elbow into the man's face, knocking him aside. In the center of the East Bridge, which led into the countryside where lay the Hagen Woods, a half-dozen men of the Blood grappled with a like number of the Order. When a sword swung at him, Richard ducked under it, shouldering the man over the edge into the river before dashing on through the opening it created. Behind, over the sounds of battle, the clash of steel and the cries of men, he could hear the wail of the light. He ran, his legs pumping seemingly of their own volition to escape. What they fled from was something worse than swords or knives. Kaelin needed no help in keeping up. She was right beside him. Once they were on the other side of the river and not far into the city, the night vanished in a harsh glare that cast sudden inky shadows pointing away from the palace.
The two of them ducked behind the plastered wall of a closed-up shop, and squatting down, gasped to catch their breath.